It's Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week. I'm joined by Mike Johnson, and right off the bat, I'm going to be transparent. We definitely had an interview with Amari Stoudemire before the show. We were going to tape it. It was going to be great. He's over in Israel. Technology's been the big superstar during the pandemic. Zoom chats, FaceTime, Skype. Mike, you're doing the show from home. That's been, the standard. Well, technology yes. was out late at a club last night, showed up to the stadium a little late. The coach looked at technology and said, I'm benching you today. We apologize. I know Matt Cause has been hyping it up that it was going to be a great interview, and it was. We just couldn't really hear Amari Stoudemire at all, so we will not be hearing from the six-time NBA All-Star during the show. There you have it.
No, unfortunately not. And you know what? Pretty fascinating guy. What he's going. It would have been a really good interview had we been able to really get into it with him, but it was such a struggle. We didn't know what was going on. For the kids out there, check out Peanuts cartoon. He sounded like the Peanuts teacher.
Right.
And we did not understand a word he was saying. Yeah. Every now and then, a couple words would come through clearly, and you're like, okay, here we go. And then, nope, he went back. So, first of all, that we apologize to the viewers. They're not going to get to hear him. But then we have to talk to the grappler, because he's the one who set the whole thing up.
Yes.
Got us out here an hour early to tape it, to bring it to the show. You think he would have troubleshooted, perhaps, some of these issues before getting you in studio an hour earlier. I mean, I'm just sitting around my house doing nothing, but you got things to do and places to go and people to see.
I'm just wondering what the A team and how they would have reacted if the grappler did this. But it was funny. You asked a really good question about LeBron James and his power as a player, and Amari Stoudemire being a former colleague of his, and just the fact that LeBron playing is essentially giving the league a lot of confidence that they're going to pull this off. And if LeBron was against it, I don't know if they would be trying it. And he started off, where I thought, okay, we're at least going to get a good answer here, and we can roll that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into, the Peanuts cartoon. But
I don't even know what he said. I have no idea. What he answered to that one.
Yeah, LeBron's got a lot of...
A lot of nerve, lot of power, a lot of humility. What does he have a lot of?
Yeah.
Cash? Who knows?
All right. Well, luckily, we do have some interviews that we will do live, including mm-hmm. Bob McKenzie at 5:05. He was breaking news during yesterday's show. The NHL and the NHLPA coming out with their tentative agreement, both with the return to play and also the CBA. Great news for hockey. Scott Mitchell at 4:25. Every day seems like another difficult one for baseball when it comes to testing. Like, yes, last week, or no, 2 weeks ago, I guess, that we worked together, Mike, we both agreed, and we're not the only ones, that getting to phase four might just be the toughest obstacle that every league has. And right. I think we're really seeing it right now. And I don't know if I should be overreacting on the testing being a mess in baseball or MLS having to either cancel games, teams pull out, TFC had to postpone their game to Saturday, or if this is just the script that we're following that we knew was going to happen, and you got to get
through
the hiccups.
Well, hang on, though, Mark. Bundesliga, they just finished their season.
Yeah.
Good. The Premiership just concluded their latest round of testing. Zero cases positive. So it's not like it can't be done, and it's not like England has been a bastion of good health and great test results. It's been a bit of a mess there as well. So it's not like it can't be done. So I think we are not overreacting. And I think you absolutely, first of all, MLS, I was excited to watch soccer. I want to watch soccer at 9 in the morning. I want to watch it all day. I want to watch TFC to get back to it. And I don't even know if they're going to start this tournament. Like, what kind of tournament can't even get off the ground? They have teams pulling out because they have so many guys testing positive. They have games being postponed. I mean, you spend all this time prepping for it. Like, how loose is the bubble down there? What is going on that guys are still getting infected, testing positive? I understand showing up mm-hmm. from the general population, but it should not be spreading in and around the teams that are already down there to the degree that it is. So that's a massive concern. And the baseball, it might be worse. Like, you spend all this time fighting and arguing, which I understand, over a CBA and money and trying to work that out, but you do it publicly and everyone finds it a bit distasteful. you finally come to terms on how to get the game back up and running. The pillar, and everyone's known this, Mark, for months. The pillar of any return to play scenario has to be based in testing.
Mm-hmm.
Testing every day, reliably, quickly, and then making the proper health decisions because of that. And we're the very beginning, we're hearing about teams with testers not showing up, or they have to mail the test to some other part of the state and it's taking days and days and they can't travel. They don't know if they're positive or negative. You've had, presumably, I know you're working on other things as well, but some portion of the Major League Baseball staff, was this was their job. Sort out how we're going to test across the country when we get back to it. And to drop the ball so quickly, so badly, so quickly, so early,
mm-hmm.
it makes you scratch your head and wonder where they're headed.
And to blame a holiday, the 4th of July, to blame the fact that you don't get your regular service from FedEx. And I don't want to laugh, but I can't help it when you talk yeah. about teams self-testing. And all I can picture is like 25 guys on a field, all with a box. And you know, you going, okay, I'll shove it up your nose, and then you shove it up, and like, no, that's so hard. What are you doing, man? And
yeah.
like, I wouldn't trust anyone on my team to do that. And
no, and I wouldn't certain trust my
teams,
kids.
And certain teams, you know, they're not getting results, so they've, you know, they either ended practices early or they didn't even have practices. In the Yankees case, I think that they did their own test and they just continue to practice, and it's just there's an inconsistency, and you know,
did you hear the Yankees logic, Mark, when they did that? And it's kind of perversely accurate. It's like, whether we're positive or negative, we'd be just as much at risk going home as we are staying here. So we might as well just stay here because, you know, we're part of the general public right now. And we would be when we leave, which unfortunately is accurate until you know kind of everyone's clean or their results inside their team unit. It's been not good. And now it hasn't been a rash of players, but there's been, you know, a handful of players electing not to play, which tells you whether it's a health thing or whether it's a family thing, pregnancy, whatever it might be. There's a variety of reasons. All of them are valid. But the fact of the matter is they have had more people opt out than maybe some of the other sports have so far. And again, that doesn't bode well for where the heads are out of the players. And when you hear stories like this, self-testing,
yeah.
Are you kidding me? I'm gonna rely on someone else swabbing my nasal cavity or collecting my saliva as to a test of this importance? I don't think so. And yet that's where they are. It is not
well,
it's so strange. And it's like it's going now. I mean, they're starting to play shortly, so
yeah.
they gotta get it sorted out.
And who's
we don't even know where everyone's playing yet.
Exactly. And yeah, that's my point. Who's watching all of this? The federal government, and they're going to decide whether or not the Blue Jays can play games in Toronto and allow the Tampa Bay Rays, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Washington Nationals, the Atlanta Braves come into Toronto and I would think theoretically stay in the hotel in the stadium, but still, you know, they no one's stopping them from going down to King Street and going on a patio and having dinner or going to Yorkville or going to the spots that they always love going to when they come to this city. And I don't blame them for that. But we don't know what, you know, a team of, you know, you're bringing in like 40 people from a baseball team.
Massive roster, too. You got a whole bunch of guys who have no chance in playing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know the Black Aces in hockey playoffs, they're not going to bed every night at 8 o'clock. Because they know they're not playing anytime soon. So to think what the 45th man on the roster is going to do when there's zero chance of him ever playing in the next week, that's a very good point. If you're the government of Ontario or Toronto or of Canada and you're watching this and you have to make a call, do we feel that it's in the best interest of our city when you factor in public safety and morale and economics and whatever they put into their equation? It's hard to watch what's going on right now and say, yes, we put our faith in that group to make sure that everyone follows the rules, they're buttoned down, and they make it as safe as possible. Because they've come out of the gate so poorly, it's almost laughable.
And everything seemed to be coming in at the end of the show yesterday, you know, the NHL breaking news, the Patrick Mahomes deal, but also the schedule in baseball. And of course, the Blue Jays' full schedule was like the last team to come out, so we were only getting little bits of their of their schedule just because of the Yankees' schedule being released and the Red Sox. But you know, here we are, July 7th, July 24th in Tampa Bay is when they would begin their season, and their first
a road game?
No, that is in Tampa. but their first home game
was going to be their home stadium, though.
Well,
who knows?
I'm using air quotes here on TSN4 if you're watching. July 28th, home game versus Washington. That could be home in Toronto. That could be Buffalo. That could be Dunedin. That could be the Trop. That could be, I don't know. I know they have a minor league team in Lansing. What's the COVID case like in Lansing? The lug nuts aren't playing this year. So, you know, like, who knows? And all the game times are different because you're not catering to a fan base. So you're seeing a lot of Saturday night games. You're seeing games at 6:30, 6:05, 3 o'clock, like all these odd times. But it's, you know, 2.5 weeks, they're barely getting practices off the ground and running. I really do hope that they are playing baseball in July 24th. Mm-hmm. It's just so hard to comprehend right now, you know, talking about, you know, what the starting rotation is going to be like, how you're going to set up for that first series against the Rays. Right. You know, baseball questions that we normally would
regular
be talking
stuff.
About. Yeah.
Regular yeah. It would be nice to be in that spot. And we know, and we've seen over the last 4 months how quickly the world could turn and things can change and maybe everything gets on the same page and writes itself properly. But right now, the entire system in baseball seems to need some fine tuning, let alone the Blue Jays, which are, you know, a situation unto themselves with. Now, I got to say, though, it wouldn't be great for the players to not know where they're playing. But I'm not sure, you know, I don't know how much it's bothering them right now. They've been kind of in limbo for how long now? Months and months.
Yeah, how's this?
They haven't known
different?
Where they're playing. And so whether they have to go and get short-term housing in Tampa again or back to their spring training housing in Dunedin, whatever it is, they'll adjust accordingly because, you know, I guess they haven't really been able to say, okay, we're going to be in Toronto. We're going to live in our Toronto houses. And even if they'll be able to live in their Toronto houses, are they going to be allowed? Or do they have to stay in the hotel? Do you know, Mark, if they have to stay during the regular season, if it's in Toronto, do the Blue Jays players have to stay in the hotel the whole time, or can they just go and live at home?
I think so, but again,
I'm not sure.
I don't, because they haven't agreed to anything. Right. We don't know what's being proposed to the government. We know this summer training camp, the team is staying in the hotel, and they're going back and forth between the hotel. I assume the restaurant in the hotel, and that's where they're getting their meals or room service, and going down to the playing surface. The Jays returned home to begin practicing yesterday. We heard the reports of one player testing positive, and any player with close contact to that player was held back in Dunedin. Reports were it was about 12 players. We'll get Scott Mitchell to give us the latest on what a Blue Jay practice looks like right now inside the dome. Before we break, and we have Bob McKenzie at 5:05 with the latest of what's going on, both of the CBA and return to play. But he just taped an insider trading segment with Gino Retta, and we kind of expected this, but I want to get your reaction as a former player. Games at noon, 4, and 8 o'clock would be the template both in Edmonton and Toronto. And I like how he used a tennis analogy for both you and I. We could be seeing games like the U.S. Open that don't begin until 10:30, 11, because what happens if you get a double overtime game in that 4 o'clock and it moves everything? It will be intriguing to say the least, but for a player, you know, I know you have sometimes the 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock NBC games, but most players aren't usually in favor of those.
No, I never cared for them, but you understand, and I would hope, we'll see when the schedule comes out, that they rotate, because I would have a real problem if you're not one of the marquee teams.
Yeah, you're not
and you're
the
getting
Washington
a whole bunch of new
the
starts.
Rangers, yeah.
But the Rangers will get 8 p.m. because NBC will want them. But if you're Carolina, I guess you're playing the Rangers, so I get that. But, you know, a team like that, a smaller market team, will you be stuck with the Florida Panthers on the noon starts? Columbus, Toronto, perfect example. Canadian team in Columbus. Do the American, would they want them at noon? But obviously Canada wants them at prime time. That would get to me eventually. But It will be different because we know athletes, hockey players included, are very routine oriented, and they have the rhythm of their days when they know they're going to play at 4, 8, whatever it might be. You know, they eat at a certain time relative to the start time. They have a nap. They go to the rink. So if you go to the rink at 5:30 for an 8 o'clock game, 2.5 hours beforehand, well, all of a sudden the game that's going on goes until 8:30, 9 o'clock. Who knows? I mean, if it's a 4 hour game, it's a double overtime marathon. Now you've been at the rink for 4 or 5 hours before your game, and when do you get dressed, and how do you time your warm up? Because you don't know exactly how long it's going to be after their game that you're going to start. It's going to be another wrinkle that guys won't love, but everyone will have to deal with it. And what we also have seen in the last few years, Mark, fortunately, is we haven't seen many overtime games go that late. We used to see them all the time, but we don't see a lot of double and triple overtimes anymore. So I guess we'll all have to deal with it, but it's going to be fascinating how that early stages work out when there's going to be that many games going on.
Mm-hmm. So, again, lots of news coming from Bob McKenzie and Frank Saravalli. We got Pierre LeBrun to jump on the show yesterday while he was grilling on his barbecue for dinner.
Grilling and chilling.
We still haven't heard reports if he overcooked whatever he was cooking, because we were keeping him on the show. So it'll be good to chat with Bob. Marcel Zwali was supposed to be on the show yesterday. He got bumped because of the news in the NHL. He will join us at 6:05. Ryan Rashog, who according to his Twitter feed almost died today because of a murder hornet. So we were very thankful. We're usually thankful to have him on the show, but especially today. So he's going to join us at 6:25 to get the latest on the Edmonton Hub, and an Edmonton Hub that is scheduled to have every single round, including the Stanley Cup final, unlike Toronto. But up next, Scott Mitchell, our Blue Jays reporter, with the latest on MLB testing, Blue Jays practicing in Toronto, and how many of the Blue Jay players are actually in the city, and how are those practices going with a bit of a work in progress kind of summer training camp. It's all coming up. Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also on TSN 4. Welcome back to Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Mike Johnson. The 4 o'clock hour brought to you by LeaseBusters. They'll rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic? Maybe. Helpful? Totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to leasebusters.com. So we are waiting to get more and more information in regards to hockey CBAs, the return to play. That will probably, I think hopeful by the end of the week that those will be ratified. But we talked a lot about it yesterday, Mike, just how hockey's approach was to get the return to play sort of done and get that information sort of figure it out before you got to the money, where baseball did the opposite. And right now, and time will only tell, it looks a lot better in favor of hockey and how they've been able to do it.
Publicly, yes. But I can't imagine, Mark, that behind the scenes, they weren't both completely interlinked. Every conversation has to do with one another. So, you know, I think what hockey did well was not have the discourse around the sport be predominantly about the business of the sport. It was more about the hockey and player safety, which I think is where hockey would prefer it to be. Whereas baseball, even though they're all, both sports, they're completely intertwined. You can't have the CBA stuff without the return to play. You can't have the return to play without the CBA. They go together, but baseball's very publicly became about the CBA and money and guarantees and prorated and stuff like that, which is less appealing to fans when everyone in the world is going through these kind of things. So I don't know if they did a good job separating it. They might have done a better job with their messaging, not letting the CBA, the business, become the focal point of the negotiations or of their decisions.
And it's given our next guest a lot of content to write about, to talk about. Our Blue Jays reporter Scott Mitchell joins us on Overdrive. How are you, Scott?
Good. How you doing, fellas?
We're good. Are you enjoying these times where it is chaotic? But as a reporter, it's not like you wake up in the morning and think, "Oh, I got nothing to write about today. This it's too dull, right?
Like, what am I going to do today?
Yeah, what am I? You just have to wait and see what the next story from the next MLB team trying to do their own testing. Like, it kind of writes itself in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, the only thing we're not writing about is really baseball at this point. It's been CBA negotiations. It's been, you know, back and forth between unions and the league. Now we're into health protocols, which is really kind of strange for a lot of us, because there's a lot of new protocols. And that's really what we have to remember, is everything is new for everybody in this instance. And it's really, there's no normal at this point, and everyone's just trying to get through it. And, you know, I heard you guys talking about all the CBA stuff and the labor negotiations that baseball went through. And that was a real struggle. And look, I think we're seeing at this point all the delays and everything kind of heap onto each other, and they're trying to do a lot in a short time frame here, and it hasn't started well.
No, Scott, not well at all. That's an all-time understatement, and it's across the league. It's not an isolated incident where it's one team perhaps, but it's several teams, including the Jays. They had to leave some guys back in Florida, I think, because of a positive test. What's the latest on the Blue Jays and their current health situation?
Well, that's the thing. They were trying to charter up here on Sunday, which a lot of players did, and they had a case that came after the original round of intake testing that obviously was a huge issue, not just because of the one positive test for a player, but the fact they had to quarantine about a dozen players. They couldn't get on the plane up here, and now they've got to go through a process that really, it's going to be at least a few days of delays before that group of players can get back up here. So that's about a dozen guys off your 60-man player pool. So they're working with about, you know, 45 guys at the stadium right now and doing little private workouts. We haven't been allowed in yet, so that'll happen later this week. But it hasn't been a good scene. And when you look at all the logistical problems the Blue Jays have, it's really put them behind. And we'll see how it affects them on the field and how their readiness is. And they're waiting for an answer from the federal government, hopefully by the end of next week. Mark Shapiro's hoping to see where they're playing their home games. And it's just been a mess league-wide. And there were Blue Jays tests that didn't come back on Friday, and staff members couldn't get into the Rogers Center on Monday. So there's been problems just about through every process of this. And it's not the Blue Jays that are alone. Mm-hmm. But when you heap on the logistical issues that they've had to face, man, it's been an interesting week and a half, and it's really going to be another interesting 2.5 weeks till they try to get to opening day.
He is TSN's Blue Jays reporter. Scott Mitchell joins us on Overdrive. And, you know, you said it, we're all craving just to talk baseball. Like, I would love to ask you right now, what did Nate Pearson hit on the radar gun today? Or does Vladdy look better at third base? But there seems to be inconsistencies with the coverage of these practices, because you just said, like, the media has not been allowed to go to these Blue Jay practices, and there's only been a couple. But, you know, we've seen, you know, on people's Twitter feeds, Yankee practices and the Pirates. And, you know, we saw Masahiro Tanaka unfortunately get hit by a line drive from Giancarlo Stanton. Luckily, Tanaka seems to be okay. But what is the protocol here, and when will the media be allowed to report on some of the nuances that do happen in these practices?
Well, it's trending towards Thursday at this point, and essentially there's protocols for us as same as there is for the players. We'll have to get temperature checked twice in there. We'll have to wear a mask the entire time. We're not allowed on the field, no field access. So you'll see some of those press box videos that have become so popular on Twitter over these last couple days. And that's pretty much it. There's no face-to-face interaction. So we'll do some conference calls, do some Zoom calls. And that's the new way of the media these days. And you know, we'll try to report on what stories are out there. And I think the big story really is just the environment these guys are spending their time in and how they're practicing. And do they believe they're going to be ready to play a baseball season in 2.5 weeks?
And that's the wild part, Scott. It's 2.5 weeks. It's so close. And yet it feels like they're just getting going, trying to figure it out. As far as the access to media, you know, so much of the locker room, which I don't know if we'll ever get back to, is kind of finding a quiet moment, having maybe a word by yourself or having a one-on-one interaction and getting some information from players that maybe not the entire press corps would have access to. Is that going to be possible? Do you have to request if you want to talk to Vladdy specifically on a one-on-one? Are any of those things going to be possible? Do you know?
Yeah, the quiet conversations are over. So the little context that you get, that's not happening this year. And you know, I'm a little worried sports-wide what the landscape is going to look like when we come out of this, because there's real reasons you could sit there and say, if you're an NHL, an NHL team, a league like Major League Baseball, to say that the clubhouse should be off limits from now on because of health issues. You could probably easily make a case that there's sanitary issues with having people come in and out where players change and do all their personal business. So you know what, I think unfortunately there's going to be a lot of changes that come from this pandemic in terms of how media covers players and teams, and you know, we'll see what shape that takes. I know access is kind of what we have and what we fight for, because it's everything that we need to bring stories to the general public, but you can probably look at some of the protocols similar to 9/11, the way things changed in terms of going into airports. I bet there's going to be a lot of things that change on that end as well.
Scott Mitchell joining us with the latest on the Blue Jays and the MLB season, which is supposed to begin at the end of this month. And Mike just pointed out 2.5 weeks. It's not that far away, and yet we don't know where the Blue Jays would play home games. Is there an idea of a date where they need to know whether they can play in Toronto? And is there also a clear-cut plan B for the Blue Jays?
Well, it's Dunedin at this point. And Mark Shapiro's talked about alternatives. They haven't revealed what those alternatives are. They're going to use Dunedin as that first alternative. But a lot of things can happen between now and then in terms of the COVID caseload and what that looks like and, you know, how safe it is to go back there. I mean, you know, you hope we're at the peak right now and things start looking better in a couple of weeks, but you just really never know. And we don't know what the alternatives are. Buffalo has been talked about a little bit, but that facility isn't ideal in terms of housing a major league team for an entire season. So right now it's Toronto, then Dunedin, and then there's alternatives that we really don't know about that are probably not what the Blue Jays are hoping for. And Mark Shapiro said last week he's hoping 7 to 10 days, which takes it into kind of the middle to late of next week. So they're hoping for a decision, but the federal government is watching this real closely, and they're not gonna expedite any sort of decision when it comes to what the Blue Jays need. They're gonna work through it slowly and meticulously and make sure the public health side is satisfied before they move into even getting back to the Blue Jays.
And what we've seen from baseball the last few days won't speed things up, because it's going to give them more cause for concern and take even a deeper look. So nothing imminent probably on that front. What about the actual preparation? And we know spring training, they play whatever it is, 25 games it seems. They're playing all the time. Pitchers getting their initial two innings worked. How quickly will the Jays ramp themselves up to getting close to game readiness? And when the season actually starts, will pitchers be able to go to the sixth or seventh inning? Will they pitch 110 pitches? Or will everyone start a little, maybe on a pitch counter, just to make sure that they work themselves up to that level?
Well, when you look at the position players, they're going to get a few at-bats. They're going to be rusty. That's just how it's going to go. When you look at the relievers, most of them have ramped up to what they need to get up to just based on the personal work they've been able to do. So if you're just a one-inning guy, you're going to be fine. Yeah. It's the starter. Yep. It's the starters that are the real issue, and they're going to be nowhere close to ramped up. 3-4 innings max, obviously pitch counts, you know, innings, workloads, limits. They're going to really make sure that these guys are taken care of early in the season. So it's going to look like a spring training game or essentially a bullpen game that you see throughout the regular season for the first couple of weeks, because pitchers are going to be nowhere near their pitch counts, and 5 innings will be even a stretch for anybody. So you're going to see 17, 18 man pitching staffs. There's 30 men on the roster for the first 2 weeks of the season, and there's no cap on pitchers. So you're going to see teams really just make sure that they've got enough arms to get them through games.
And of course, Scott, the Blue Jays will begin this 60-game season in the state of Florida. The season was released.
Perfect.
The schedule, I should say, was released yesterday. And I don't know if anything really stood out to you, because we knew that primarily they'd be playing the AL East and then, you know, a few games against the NL East. But, you know, the times definitely jump out at me, just because you're so used to 7 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and maybe some 4 o'clock games on the Saturdays. Now you have 3:10, 6:40, and a lot of those Saturday games are at night. Is this primarily just to make it a TV-friendly, or are there other thoughts behind putting games at these times for health and safety issues or just the logistics of trying to pull off this season?
Well, look, we don't really have an answer from the Blue Jays of why they change times, if it's actually an MLB thing or a team decision that they just wanted to switch up the games. You know, I don't know that it matters. There's no fans, so there's definitely a TV element to it. But one thing the Blue Jays have been doing behind the scenes is doing a lot of sleep research, and they've looked at – that's why they changed their 4 o'clock start times last year. They've moved those around because the day game after – or the day game after the night game has always been tough on baseball players. And as we've gotten into this analytical era, they've really looked at what time it is to host ideal home games. And this is probably part of that. And the Blue Jays are going to try to manipulate the schedule a little bit to make sure they're in the best position possible, because just in just about every way, they're not.
Well, Scotty.
You know, they are not. But I read some reports, Scott, that they had a difficult schedule. Is that true? Was it any more difficult than you anticipated? Road home splits, tough start early on in the year. Is it more difficult than we knew it was already going to be, given that we knew their opposition?
I mean, look, subjectively, we all know the Blue Jays have a tough road every single year in the AL East. And then when you combine that with the crossover into the NL East, that's arguably one of the deepest divisions in baseball when you go through the Braves, the Nationals, the Mets, who are a pretty good ball club, and the Phillies, who are a pretty good ball club as well. So subjectively, you look at it and you're like, yeah, tough schedule. And then you add it up and they've got the third toughest strength of schedule in the league behind the Mets and the Pirates. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough road. And when you consider open up 3 in Tampa and then you play a home and home set with the Nationals for 4 games, that's 7 of your 60 games right there. And there's no time to really have a skid out of the gates. Those first 20 games for every single team are actually probably the most important 20 games of the season. Because if you get behind the 8 ball, it's a tough road back and there's not enough time.
Well, at a time where we're just we're trying to talk about baseball and baseball-centric questions, if you're watching on TSN4, you can see that over your shoulder, there's a Barry Bonds jersey. Do you want to do this? Should Barry Bonds be in Hall of Fame today, or do you want to wait for another day? I don't know.
I would love to. I think he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I don't think Hall of Fame voters, which I am not one, should be judging character. And Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before he even took a steroid, in my opinion.
Well, allegedly took a steroid. Let's just...
Are you sitting in a Barry Bonds-like lazy boy chair that he used to rock in the
right.
locker rooms? That's what I want to know.
You'd know if I was, trust me.
Laid back.
That chair alone should be in Cooperstown.
That's a Hall of Fame chair, exactly.
There should be a little glass cabinet there, and you can take a look, or maybe even sit in it for a little bit. But every single day we have more questions, and you're trying to provide answers. I know, Scott. I know it's not always easy, but we appreciate you coming on. All the best, and we look forward to crawling towards, hopefully, a baseball season. We'll see. Thank you.
Hopefully is the key word. See you, fellas.
There's Scott Mitchell, our Blue Jays reporter, and 2.5 weeks, as you pointed out, Mike, it's not exactly like you're not talking about months anymore. And I think the Blue Jays, if you in a candid moment, especially if you're a coach or a manager, would like to say, I just want to put a practice together, right? And I'm sure a lot of teams
and know where and who and when and have that information available. And what's strange about baseball, Mark, is that baseball seems to run at a very tepid pace.
Yes,
nothing happens quickly in baseball. Yes. Not the games.
Good change.
Not
the moments. In your voice there.
Not the spring training, none of it. It all is just very stretched out, and they take their time, and they know it's the ultimate marathon, not a sprint sport. And yet, everything about what's going on right now goes against that. It is frantic, it is hectic, it is compressed, and it is unusual. It is not what they're used to. So we'll see how every team, not just the Blue Jays. Now, the Blue Jays have... The border and where they're playing to deal with what's going on top of everything else. But every team is going through weird times. So we'll see how it all shakes out in just 2.5 weeks, because no matter what, those games are going to get played on those days, and we'll see how they go.
Yeah. And, I always thought that baseball was affected the most in terms of, the season being cut down to 60 games, new rules, which I'm all for, and extra innings. But there might be another sport that could be taking that claim from them. A sport that Canadians love, especially out west, We'll discuss that and how they are changing the rules of their sport in a global pandemic. That's coming up on Overdrive here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Mike Johnson. Before the break, I mentioned a sport that will see some big changes when it returns, and that's sport. And it's a sport that gets discussed a lot here on Overdrive. Curling.
I thought you were going there.
Yes. There you that good guess. The most notable changes involving gameplay will include the use of just one sweeper during games, no sweeping the opposition stone behind the tee line, and new markings on the ice for non-throwing team members to be stationed. There's going to be get over there, stand over there, don't leave that corner. But those moments when everyone's jumping in and sweeping, even the skip is sweeping, well, you're not going to have that, at least for the first bit of the season, as they battle this pandemic. So there you have it.
Aren't they going to also, sometimes when the one team shoots it and then the other team waits for it to get across the tee line and they try to sweep it to get out of the rings?
Yes.
Apparently no secondary team jumping in on the first team stone as well. So, I'm all for making things safe. As long as, you can maintain the fabric of the game. And I don't know how much having a secondary sweeper on a stone matters. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much having a tertiary sweeper matters. I don't know how much it does, but there probably will be some adjustments. And I guess the sweeping really just is there to make amends for a slightly misthrown stone. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some curling people will come at me right now for my poor terminology. But
yeah. Brian Mudrick is on line one.
Yeah, the buddy's all over me, exactly. But listen, people want to play. People want to play their sports. And as long as they can, it feels like the same sport. It's not going to really erode the fabric of the game to the point where it's no longer the same game. Then have at it. People want to get back to it. People love curling in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, they watch curling a lot. When it's on TV, they get good numbers. The Scotty, the Breyer, all those different tournaments, they get good numbers. And Canada's very good at it. We're one of the best countries in the world. So that will be interesting to see, everybody trying to sort out how they will be able to get back to playing. I guess that's a question of keeping away from each other. That also seems like a sport, very comfortably, and you could wear a mask. I know you have to yell a little bit when you hurry hard or whatever it is, but you're not huffing and puffing that much out of breath. You should be able to wear a mask if you're around other people
and keep
yourselves relatively safe.
It'll keep you warm in the rink.
It's like a scarf in a cold rink. That's it.
They also mentioned that instead of traditional handshakes, a friendly wave or broom tap is suggested.
Okay. So I don't know. I would not be much for handshakes after I lose anyway, so I'd be like, broom wave and get me out of here. Jeff O'Neill style with the face off, getting them out of the course quickly as possible if you don't win. So,
well, that is always celebrated so much in hockey that it's like no other sport does this. Two teams that battle for seven games, triple overtime, everyone's got blood on their face, and now they're shaking hands because they're respectable human beings. Like, what is that like when you lose a playoff series, a hard fought one? You're in the. All you want to do is get out of that building, and you're like, "All right, I gotta shake this guy's hand."
I could never turn it off that quickly, and I'm not criticizing people who can. And I'll watch, or when I played, and you would see, heartfelt embraces, and guys who were at each other for 2 weeks trying to maim each other, and it's hugs and it's mutual respect, which is nice, but, long, heartfelt, well wishes, and I'm like, I didn't feel that. Yeah. I said, good luck, good job. I'm gone. And my best story of it, Mark, is that in 99, we played Philly in the first round. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about it with Keith Jones, who, we had on TSN every now and then. And he was with Philadelphia, and he was a very skillful irritant. Decent, good player, but he really got under the skin of the opposition. And he prided himself. He never shut up the whole game. And he was going after one of our best players, Steve Thomas. And Stumpy, who was an emotional guy and a passionate player and a physical player, was losing it all series long, was so angry, which meant Keith Jones was doing his job because Stumpy was clearly irritated by his comments and his behavior. And so we're going through the handshake line, and Stumpy and Jonesy get together, and I don't know if I just happen to be around them. And, you know, you're expecting, like, even if it's a terse, good luck and, like, whatever. It wasn't any of that. Stumpy said, "You think this is over? This is not over. I'm going to see you next year," kind of thing. Yes. And Stumpy's one of the nicest, best dudes ever. And yet, you know, he kind of embraced my mental, like, he couldn't, like, no.
And he just won the series. Like, he's in a good mood. Yeah.
And he's like, "Nope, I'll see you next year. This is not over. We'll continue this conversation." Mm-hmm. And Jonesy's like, "Oh boy, here we go." So, you know, that's where my mindset kind of drifts initially. You know, if you have friends on the other team or former teammates or whatever, like, you know, you'll have a word for them because you know them a little bit more personally. But yeah, you're just so bitterly disappointed. I respect the history of it, and there is something that we've romanticized about it, and it's true. But I was not the guy to be giving the slow-mo as I, you know, tearfully hugged all my conquering opponents to tell them how great they are. That's not who I was.
I keep picturing Marty St. Louis crying. I think he did it a couple of times. He's an emotional guy. Very good hockey player as well.
Marty, that's why he was good. He was emotional.
But,
exactly.
But I haven't read anything. I haven't seen it in the return to play. But I have to assume that the handshake line is gone for this year. Like, I don't know what they...
I guess.
If they're going to, like, stick out their stick and kind of do, like, a... like
glove taps?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, well, the thing is, Mark, and you're right, for practical purposes and probably for appearances, they will probably do away with it this year. And maybe it's, you know, a tap on the shin pads.
Yeah.
Because if you're healthy enough to play against each other...
I know.
To be in the corners, to be falling on top of each other...
It's a little hypocritical,
is it not? And we're not healthy enough to shake each other's hand... before we go off the ice and, like, everyone could grab a squirt of sanitizer on the way off and clean themselves up before they go and touch their face or anything. I don't think it would cause a problem if they did it, but I imagine you're right. I bet they come up with some version of it to have the visual, but actually maybe it is like just sticks tapping in the shin pads. And that's probably what it'll end up being.
It's so funny because you and I could be cheek to cheek in the glass. And then 2 minutes later, it's like, well, we can't shake hands.
No.
Right? Like, it's...
Never.
But you're right. Like, the optics of it, because someone will point to it and be like, look at these guys. They're shaking hands. Like, they're not taking this seriously. And it's, you, like...
Meanwhile, the guys will be like, I haven't left a hotel property in 7 weeks. So I'm taking it pretty darn serious. So you just... we're doing everything we can. But if you want to believe that everyone in the bubble has been tested every day, and they test... negative every day,
right?
Like, then it should be okay,
right? Like, if you get to a stage like we just mentioned with the EPL, now the EPL's they're going back to their homes, right? Like, they're not in a hub like hockey would be. But if you get to a stage where, and I don't know if it would take to the second round or the third round, we just did a bunch of tests and no one came back positive, then theoretically, I guess the holes in the hub are, you know, the servers or the cleaning staff.
And also, you never know, a false negative test. You never know, maybe they've become infected on the way to the rink since that test. Like, you just don't ever know for sure.
Yeah.
So that's why you're going to err on the side of caution. But they're going to do everything they can to make it as safe enough to play. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, basketball players. I mean, the think amount of, like, body-to-body contact happens in basketball.
Setting a screen?
Like, well, think about down in the low post. All they're doing is banging into each other the whole time.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. I imagine, you know what? Did you scour the whole 40-something page, 80-page return to play protocol? Because they answered just about every single question you could come up with about what you players can and can't do. But I did not or have not seen a reaction to the post-series handshake line.
No.
But I bet that the league will have an official policy as to what they're going to do.
Yeah, I would think so. Sooner rather than later, we're actually going to be talking about hockey. And
pretty soon. Camp opens in, 6 days?
Are you sharp as an analyst? Like, how much homework do you need to do? Like, did you remember that Jake Muzzin was hurt before all this? Like,
it's a very fair question. I've been kind of working a little bit throughout and a few, you know, different spots. But, yeah, like, what was it? Patrick Marleau plays for Pittsburgh. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I mean,
I
started just remembering. Sammy Vatanen plays for Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're like, wait a second, did he? So Yeah, I will have to be reminded. When they go to camp, I'll be going to camp, and I'll be reading every day and trying to keep track of what's going on and who's doing what. And but then there's also the part where, like, whatever happened before, how much does that even matter, Mark? I mean, it's so long ago. It's like a different season. So yeah, Philly ended on a tear. Do I put any stock in that? I guess we'll find out, but probably not, I don't think.
And if they have a bad week, it doesn't matter. They'll be done, right?
Exactly.
And the Leafs are playing Columbus. Columbus is a different team. So lots to get to with Bob McKenzie at 5:05. We also have Ryan Rashog at 6:25. And a reminder, the 4 o'clock hour was brought to you by LeaseBusters. LeaseBusters will get you out of your car lease today. It's easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees, and go to leasebusters.com for more. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also on TSN 4.